Blog Talk Radio.
All right, folks, this is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron.
Yo, it's Tornado 710.
We are coming at you with another edition of the Fight News Unlimited Combat Sports Show. Tonight we have a couple special guests. Should be a great show. We have, first off, at 8:15 or so, we're going to give a ring to Christy Martin, who is really one of the faces over the years. And she's going to be fighting Mia St. John on June 19th, I believe, 18th or 19th. But she's going to be on and talking about going all the way back to when she was promoted by Don King. Believe it or not. Right.
Folks that really brought her up in the forefront, and I had heard of her, you know, before, you know, being a boxing fan, but she was given the opportunity to fight on the, I believe it was Mike Tyson, Frank Bruno, their second fight, MMA 6, and that undercard, and the Tyson-Bruno fight was about as competitive as, you know, Tyson hit the heavy bag, except the heavy, except Bruno was less durable, but it was the Christy Martin fight that stole the show. I watched that over Lock Haven's teammate of mine, Jason Fletcher. His family was from Lock Haven. So he had the whole team over to, you know, watch the fights. And, you know, that was when we were sitting there all, you know, going nuts in a Christy Martin play. And I think he fought a woman by the name of Deidre Dougherty, Irish girl. And they just tore into each other. And, you know, Christy won the fight in the decision. And that really open the door for, you know, female boxing.
Right. And, you know, it's just definitely one of those things that we're always trying to talk about, get the women in both combat sports, mixed martial arts and boxing, some extra recognition. This year is also the first year that we're going to have boxing for women in the Olympics. And I know that she feels real passionate about that subject because she visited some of the camps and training centers for some of these boxers. So she's definitely a supporter for sure. But speaking of the pros, we ought to talk about a nice performance last Friday night by Bobby Hank, Hammer and Hank.
I didn't get a chance to talk to him, but I did email Hank on Saturday morning. Obviously, it looked a little rough at the start. You know, he got knocked down, and about maybe like the first minute or so of the fight, and I said, oh, shit, you know. Because this guy, Danny Williams, was a pretty impressive puncher. And I know a lot of people looking online and everything were picking Williams in that fight. And it was shit, you know. Naturally stronger left out in front, and he just immediately started using his jab. And I think that, I mean, and Rich being, and you yourself being a guy that is a guy that fought primarily off the jab, you can appreciate that. That's when he really used his jab to, you know, bust the guy up, set up his combinations. And there was a few times that I thought he had a shot to knock him down, but Williams showed a pretty good chin and he knew what the distance. You know, one thing I said to Hank the next day, I said, what is that boy time of year yet after you box him off so bad?
Yeah, he just seemed to be much quicker with jab, definitely, but also with some of the other punches. And he just fought a much better game plan overall, and Williams seemed to be really frustrated. Every time he came in, he seemed he would get popped by something. So he tried to fight on the outside, and he just couldn't do that with his reach. And you know, the big thing coming in before the fight was, Williams has got all this power, this, that, and the other thing. Well, we only saw it in one round. And Hank got a glorified knockdown, really, for, I guess, basically, you know, I don't think he really took a knee or anything. I think it's gloves. Maybe touch the ground, stumbled for a second, but it really wasn't any kind of traditional knockdown where he was on his ass or anything. It was just, bad timing on his part. And it was kind of funny because Teddy Atlas, our boy over there at ESPN, says about 5 minutes before he got hit, he said, not even 5 minutes, probably 5 seconds, he had just finished his comment about how Hank Lundy is notorious for making one small mistake.
Yeah, exactly.
And then, boom, he gets... So there was his mistake. He got it out of the way early. So it wouldn't involve, controversy later. So that was good. But I actually kind of scored the fight because I was writing an article on it and scored it very close to what the judges had it. So it wasn't really too much of a surprise to see him get the decision. It's just I thought it would be a much better fight. And Hank did say...
I thought it was more competitive. I mean, I thought you scared me. Danny Williams is a very good puncher. He's a very good puncher. But skill-wise, you never would be obviously superior fighter was. The only disagreement that, I watched the fight, my father and I, we watched together, as, we usually do. The only disagreement we have was in the first round, sort of the 10 and 8 round, because up until the point of the match, and Hank was pretty much controlling that first round. I didn't think they needed to do that at 10-8 for Williams, but they did. But from that point forward, I guess it really didn't matter. Hank was obviously the superior technician out there.
Yeah, there was a bunch of controversy there.
Yeah. Might have been some controversy if it wouldn't have played to Williams.
Yeah.
That wasn't going to happen.
No. Yeah, Hank did talk about, too, wanting to knock him out before the fight, so I was kind of hoping to see a knockout ending, but, he also... is really up there with the TV popularity now, so I think showing that he can go the distance and still look good is important for him because now he'll maybe get the title shot.
I did see online today on Facebook. It wasn't Hank that posted it. I'm trying to remember who it was, but said he is now running for. World title fight with Antonio DeMarco, a world title list, and not to be
What are you Facebooking? What's going on?
For me?
Yeah.
Well, I was Facebooking earlier, I'm not now.
I keep hearing that beep. What's
it? Oh, dude. Oh, I need to get an email.
Popular guy.
You know what emails are saying to me?
What?
Emails are saying to me, yes, we've received your job application. I'm trying to get out of the tip for location I'm in right now.
I got a call this week from some company that... is claiming to need people to work on foreclosed homes. And so they go through this whole spiel with me on the phone, and then they're like, we just need to do a background check, and we need you to pay to do that for us. So can you process that $80 right now? Can we do that?
Yeah.
I was like, let me call you back. I figured I'd do
research. That one day, that's a scam and a half.
Yeah. It didn't sound like a good deal, but I kind of got suspicious when they kept saying, your area. I wanted to be like, well, what is my area? Do you even know? So I just figured I'd let it go easy. Try them, see if they could try to scheme somebody else.
I mean, it seems they're not in place because they're just easy to shit. I do a lot of stuff on Career Builder. And they'll do stuff like I apply for a job right now for interview job for advertising, public relations, and print and publishing, which was all a part of my major, marketing and all that. So I'll apply for the job. The next day I'll get like 4 emails like, oh, because once you apply for a job on there, I guess it like bumps you up, like for like, all the resumes that are out there, like, make yourself like visible to employers. It bumps you to the top, saying that this person is still active on a job search. And the next day, you'll get like 2 or 3 emails, couple of them from like insurance agencies thinking, you have like, you know, the right qualifications to, you know, do this or whatever. And it's like, yeah, but I don't want to be a insurance salesperson. You know, commission only. And then other ones, you'll just think about like real estate. Like, take our real estate quiz and see if it's a good match. And I'm like,
I remember I used to really fuck with people all the time. Like they would send you an email, yeah, we got this great job opportunity, and you know, you can do this and you can do that and blah blah blah, and you're self motivated and a hard worker and saying all this shit. And then I'd go on there, I'd be like, oh, thank you for contacting me, I'm very interested, and please let me know what is your base salary. I require $40,000 a year to start. And I need 2 weeks paid vacation, and and a full benefit, the 401k, all this stuff. And they're like, oh, well, this job is like commission based, but we wish you the best of luck in your job search. Thank you. Thank you, dildo. All right. What else was I going to ask you, Rich? I was going to ask you, we talked about the fight from Friday night, a good performance by Hank. I don't think there was anything on Saturday, was there?
Not that I watched.
Yeah, I don't think there was. I think my dad watched something on the Spanish channel. I don't know who's cracking. I think, even though I'm Italian, I'm not into soccer. I know soccer's huge over in Italy, but I'm an American, damn it, and I don't watch soccer. And my dad definitely can't watch soccer. But he'll watch it on the Spanish channel. Just for the guy giving the long goal and hold it for like 10 seconds. I'm like, yeah, Dad, but you only get like 1 goal a game. You're going to watch a game just to hear that? He's like, yeah, you know, I turned it on for a few minutes. And what did he happen to actually turn it on? As soon as he did, somebody scored. And it goes into the room, and I heard that. I'm like, you got to be shitting me. You really fucking watching this? I'm like, that's my father for you.
Yeah.
But he's he still got the Crohn's disease, but he is working out again. And the last few nights, he and I have been working the punch mix together. So if you see my latest Facebook status, I was saying how I had a great workout tonight, very intense. That's the good news. Bad news is I'm still pissed off about, you know, the bullshit that I went through at work today. The more bad news is that I hurt my right hand again. It's swollen twice normal size. I said, but the good news is I use my left hand for bitch slapping dumbasses.
Christy broke her hand pretty bad in her last fight. Dakota Stone there, so maybe he has some talk about hand injuries. we got a couple of interesting stories. Your boy, Hector Camacho, in the news this week.
Yeah.
One
of my coworkers was like, have you ever heard a guy named Hector Camacho? I'm like, of course I have. You know, he did whatever, and I'm like, oh, really? Oh, my God, that's great. I said, laugh. And, you know, I've known Hector Camacho for a long time. Ever favorite of mine.
Yeah, apparently there's no, like, story about what exactly he did available, but basically the police got called to his house by the neighbors.
Yeah, child abuse. I'm like, what is he beating up his son Hector Jr., who's like a 30-year-old pro fighter?
Yeah. Well, it was interesting because, you know, Hector Jr. just got busted, I think, for, or no, it was thinking maybe it was Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. got busted for DUI recently.
I heard about that.
But anyway, Hector...
Was
the Ninja's last fight. Yeah, the Ninja's last fight, exactly. But Hector actually was training with somebody else and then just recently decided, I really want to train with my father. So now his father is training and this just happened. So it's like, great, you've got a way to throw the guy back in the spotlight. But anyway, he's charged. It doesn't look like it's going to be any big deal, like huge jail time, but he's got a record, so you never know. And speaking of Julio Chavez Jr., Julio Cesar Chavez Jr., he's scheduled now to fight Andy Lee. Big time fight for both of these guys. Lee's only got one loss. They're going to fight June 16th on HBO. From the Sun Bowl in El Paso, Texas. And,
That other very interesting fight that we just signed, between, maybe Chamber.
Sure. Your hair is amazing.
Thanks to have shoulders from there. Poor shame.
Sorry about that.
How was that?
That was a commercial on ESPN with the story about Chavez and Lee Yarn.
Oh.
Chavez is 45-0-1 with 31 knockouts. And I think Lee has one loss. I don't see his record right here, though. Doesn't make sense. Here it is. 28-1 with 20 KOs for Lee. Hard to believe that Chavez Jr. has 45 wins already.
I know.
Crazy.
You sure, doesn't it?
26 years.
Oh, I forgot to do this last week, Rich, but I'd like to throw a very special shout out to a former guest of ours and a personal favorite of mine, the Tasmanian Devil himself, Vinny Paz, who recently got engaged. You know, Paz, you know, he's almost 50 now, and he finally decided to settle down. So I actually Facebooked him when he announced it. It was funny because him and Greg Howe were having a little talking shit on there. Like, Paz is like, it's about time. Pop out some little Legos. And Paz is like, just remind you, 2 out of 3, bitch. So, you know, laughing at that. He goes, I don't want no little maggots around. And I'm like, nice. I'm still, you know, I've been so busy lately, and so I may as well get a break. I might just call out sick of Jason Ward to piss him off. But I still got a regular view on his DVD. I haven't really had any time. I've got aside from working and then, not working, looking for another.
Sorry to press for time here.
Hello?
Hello, Christy.
Hey, how are you?
Good. This is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron from Fight News Unlimited. And we're also on the line with Tony the Tornado Pinnacal, our boxing guy.
Hey.
Okay, I'm not out of love anything. How you guys doing?
Good.
How's life out there in Vegas?
What's that?
How's life out there in Vegas?
Well, actually, I'm on the East Coast, doing a little training and getting ready for the criminal trial, unfortunately, that I have coming up. So I'll be back in Vegas as soon as the trial's over and back in the deal with Miguel Diaz.
All right. And that must be a pretty difficult situation there with, the trial going on. And but it also seemed to, spark your comeback. At what point did that get to a point where it was not only recovering from injuries, but getting back to boxing?
Yeah, you know what? Before I left the hospital, as soon as I started talking and kind of deciding what the future was going to hold for me, I told everybody, look, I'm going back to the gym, I'm going back to the ring, and, somebody somewhere is going to give me a fight. And, my first call was to Miguel Diaz because I knew Miguel would watch me work out, and if it wasn't there, I didn't have it, he would say, you know, put his arm around me like a good dad would and say, you've seen your better days. It's time to call it a career. Be done. But he didn't. He did just the opposite. He said, you know, you're looking good. I think we can still learn a few new things. And, you know, I felt like I was on my way to my 50th win in my last fight against Dakota Stone before the referee stopped the fight and the doctor over a broken hand, which has never happened in boxing. I won't say never, but it's very, you know, very few times has it happened that the fight stopped because of a broken hand.
And you still wanted to fight, right?
Oh, I was begging the doctor, please, you know, 50 seconds. We're 50 seconds, less than 50 seconds from our 50th win. Let me just finish the fight. I mean, we knew the hand was broken at least three rounds earlier, and the doctor had already been in my corner after every round. It was no secret. The hand's broken. So what? Let's keep going. You know, it's 50 seconds. 50 seconds from a victory. And it was way ahead, like 3 or 4 points on the scorecard. So, actually, I could have taken a knee and still won the fight. But, you know, hindsight 2020, and we'll move on to get number 50 against Mia St. John on June 19th.
Awesome. And how is the hand doing these days?
You know, the hand's feeling pretty good. It's strong. Probably going to rely on my jab a lot against Mia and my left hook. And then we'll drop a few right hands in there from time to time and just kind of warm it up. And then, you know, when it feels really, really good, we'll drop it for the last time for the night and for the career.
So this is definitely one and done. That's it, last fight?
I'm going to say it's one and done. You know, boxers, we're sometimes hard to get out of the ring, but I've been doing this since 1989, which is quite a long time. And by the time the fight rolls around, I'll be 44 years old. Even though I feel great, I have other interests, and I'm going to start doing other things. One, managing fighters, and I have a light heavyweight that's going to be challenging Labredo Andrade in El Paso on April 21st on Showtime. So that's going to, you know, that's going to be a big opportunity. My kid's ready, and I think he's going to pull off a big upset. So, you know, there we go. We're moving toward a world championship as a manager, and, you know, we'll see what else happens.
Who's your fighter that's going to fight Andrade?
Roland Bryant is his name.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know if I'm familiar with him yet. Obviously, I've seen Andrade fight about 6 or 7 times. I've known guys that fought him. Best advice I can give you going in to fight him is go for the body, because the only way you're going to do any damage hitting him in the head is you hit him with a baseball bat.
that's definitely the scoop on him. And, you know, the other thing is that he's going to be right there in front of my kid. My guy's a pretty decent puncher. And, you know, we'll see. My kid takes a good shot. So, you know, I think it's going to be whom he hit to first. And we'll go from there.
Right. One question I was going to ask you to start, when, you know, Rich told me earlier we were going to have you on the show tonight. We were talking about some of the times you were fighting on the Don King cards and some of the Mike Tyson undercards. And I was debating with Rich. I was trying to break out my memory to see how good it was. Rich calls me the Rain Man of boxing because I remember way too many stats off the top of my head. And the fight that really got you in the forefront, was that on the Tyson-Bruno card in Vegas? Because I remember watching it over a teammate of mine's house. We were getting ready for the Nationals that year, and we were all training, so that we kind of went out on a Saturday night to his house. None of us could eat because we had to make weight the following week. And if I'm not mistaken, I think the fight was against a woman by the name of Deidre Gogarty. Am I right?
Absolutely right. And, you know, I think that's the fight that definitely, you know, elevated my career. But it's also the fight that put women's boxing on the map because so many people had tuned in, of course, to see Mike Tyson. And I think I fought, not the fight right before Mike, but there was a fight and then me. So, like, there was just a fight between us. So, you know, basically everybody's kind of settled in and, you know, wait for the Tyson fight. So they get us. They get these two women, and they're shocked, you know, first of all, to see two women fight. They don't know the king's up with these girls on. And then, you know, here I am in the pink. Deidre, she breaks my nose in the second round, and I'm, you know, so I'm bleeding like crazy. And I'm sure a lot of people probably thought I was going to quit. But, you know, I just kept fighting harder and harder and begging the referee again, you know, don't stop the fight. Whatever you do, I'm fine. And, you know, thank goodness Deidre was so tough, because that's really what I think showed the people the kind of skills that I had. But it gave people a taste of women's boxing.
What's that been like?
Yeah, I know that you wish you would have had him to fight. I know they were talking about possible matchups with Lucy Evelaker. Is there any fights that you wish you would have gotten to have made?
Really, you know, I fought everybody that was anybody in my era. You know, the whole Lucia Riker thing, the media, she's just a bunch of media hype. You know, she does what she does. She's an actress. And she acted like, so I was disappointed, obviously, that it didn't happen, because it was $4 million. So that kind of hurt, you know, when I got that call and said the fight was off. But, you know, move on, you go fight another day, and that's what I've done.
And what's it been like for you to be sort of kind of the face of women's boxing for so many years, and to kind of encourage the growth of the sport for women, and especially now this year with the Olympics inviting women's boxing?
I think that, you know, it's a great opportunity that the women have now to represent their country. And I just actually was at the New York Golden Gloves, and basically I told those winners that, hey, you know, a little part of me hopefully will be moving on. Some of them will be trying to make the Olympic team. You know, a little part of me will be in the ring with them, because I feel like some of the daughters that I helped pick down made it possible for them to be able to go fight for the country. And, you know, I think it's a beautiful opportunity. I wish, I guess I wish it would have been around when I was younger, but from Southern West Virginia, amateur boxing wasn't, I didn't grow up thinking I was going to be a boxer anyway, so probably wouldn't have ever even crossed my mind to try for the Olympics. But you know, I think the skill level is much better now than it was probably as I was coming up. But at the same time, you know, I think women's boxing right now is really, as a whole, is on the decline. In the United States, we have, you know, the big promoters are not putting women on like they used to.
Yeah, I've seen that myself, and it's unfortunate. But, hello?
Hello, Rich.
Hello?
I can hear you.
Yeah, I just went out for a second there. But I was going to ask, you know, who was the toughest girl you ever fought in boxing so far?
So far, I think the toughest opponent I've ever had has been myself. And that's because I always want to be in better shape. I always want to be sharper. I always want to hit harder, have better defense. So I think, you know, I'm always my toughest critic, and I'm always my toughest opponent. You know, they say shadow boxing is the hardest person that you ever fight, and I believe that that's probably true. If you do it right, you know, you have the hardest fights you can have in the gym.
Yeah, they always start you off with shadow boxing or fighting in the mirror, every gym I've ever gone to. So.
That's right. It's the hardest thing if you do it right.
Right. And what do you love most about boxing? Just the sport itself and the experience of being a boxer?
Boxing has been very good to me. I just love the challenge. Just to challenge myself, how much can I get out of this? How much can I get out of me? you know, how deep can I dig down and go another round. The fans have been awesome. I think overall I have been given a great deal of respect, and I'm just, you know, I think I crossed over that people just saw me as a boxer, as a fighter, not so much as, oh, there goes Christy Martin, the woman fighter. I just want to be Christy Martin, the fighter. And that's why I think I got to that level of, and it's, you know, just another fighter.
Right. Now, obviously, the sports opportunities for women weren't that great when you first started, but how did you first actually break into the sport, and what kept you there in the beginning?
I started while I was in college. I did a tough man contest, tough man, and of course, tough woman. You know, I fought women, and I was fortunate enough to win. I think I won 3 fights, won $300, and you know, but I was hooked. It's the worst drug in the world, boxing. So addictive. Just the crowd, the excitement, and everything that goes along with it. You just fall in love with it. But that's how I started. It was actually through the tough man contest. And then, of course, the big break came when I signed with Don King in 1993.
You had something in common with Butterbean.
What's that?
You got something in common with Butterbean. That's how it really starts in that circuit.
Right. Actually, I did commentating, I think, with Butterbean on the World Tough Man, Tough Woman event. You know, he's a pretty nice guy. I don't know how good of a boxer. You know, I don't think he's a really great boxer, but, you know, he made a lot of money. And, you know, and Bob Arum was he knew how to promote him. So he used them to keep people tuning in that really weren't boxing fans. They were just fans of the tough man style that just wanted to see a street fight. And that's what Butterbean gave them.
Yeah, we had him on the show once or twice over the years, and I met him in person out in Worcester, Massachusetts, a couple of years ago. So he's one of those characters. He's definitely been able to go back and forth between boxing and mixed martial arts pretty well. And I think one of his last fights was against the old world's strongest man, Marius Pudzianowski, and he got thrown around pretty bad in that fight.
Right.
It makes it look good, you know, at the beginning. And, you know, every now and then he gets lucky. But anyway, what do you think about the popularity of boxing right now? And you mentioned that the Olympic boxing is not so hot in the United States, but it seems like, you know, there's always comparisons now between MMA and boxing, and people are always saying boxing is dying. But what's your perspective on that?
Well, I think, you know, boxing's hurting a little bit, but at the same time, the biggest pay-per-view event you know, in the country are still boxing events, not MMA. I think the younger audience maybe tends to lean a little bit more toward the MMA stuff because of just, in my opinion, but now this is an older person talking, you know, it's just a street fight. And it's just so much more violent. There's, you know, you can't really see as much art as with a boxing match. You know, it's not just a fight. It's people are trying to set each other up for certain punches and certain combinations. And, you know, I think we need to do something with boxing to grab back on to the younger generation. And hopefully the Olympics will do that. We'll have another Sugar Ray Leonard or, you know, Oscar De La Hoya, Muhammad Ali. Some great story will come out of the Olympics that will get everybody excited again about boxing.
The one thing that I've been saying, and I've been doing the show with Rich now for 4 years, and I first came on here in late 2007, actually as a guest on the show when we were doing a boxing versus mixed martial arts three-part debate. And I teach a boxing former All-American boxer. I actually train young guys right now for boxing. I'm a Philadelphia guy, so I trained in the old legendary Philadelphia Gym Wars, and I go to a lot of local fight cards in Philadelphia. Now, granted, in Philadelphia, we have maybe a little bit of an advantage because, you know, Philadelphia still is a heavily boxing town. So we have a lot of live local events and a lot of boxing gyms where, you know, you have, you know, local kids that will fight and people will come out. But part of my argument and my debate was what hurt the Olympics for the last 20 years was after the Roy Jones debacle of 88, they changed the scoring, which made the fights not as exciting. They were more, you know, peck and duck fights. I think that hurt it. The other thing was the magazines weren't profiling the team as much. I remember when I first started getting into boxing in around 88, I opened my Ring magazine and there was all the U.S. guys by weight class, who their what their best you know, chances were, and I knew these guys before they ever turned pro. Now it's like a lot of the team from 04 and 08, I didn't really, but I'm a subscriber to Ring magazine and I still didn't know the team. So I think that hurt it. And my biggest point in the boxing versus mixed martial arts debate, which I think was the point that helped me win the debate against the guy I debated against, was I love a sport like boxing because there's a lot of strategy involved to it. You take two guys now, I mean, it's not where it can be over in a matter of seconds. But I like where you can set a guy up, you can strategize out there, you can think on your feet, make adjustments. That's what I love about the sport. And I always compare it to eating a filet mignon, where a lot of mixed martial arts fights, and no disrespect against them, a lot of them are eating like a fast food meal. You know, you get it in so fast and it's over. That was my bit. And I think some of the greatest fights of history in boxing were fights where a fighter got off the canvas, was hurt bad, had to hold on to survive, and then after he held on, you know, he was able to make his comeback. Or in a mixed martial arts fight, when he hit that canvas and the guy pounced on him, it was over. I'm talking about the Gotti Ward, Castillo Corrales, Marciano Walcott, even the last round of Frazier Ali. Fight that turned out to be epics that would have not been. Even a few months ago, Kirkland Angula. Fight that, you know, would have only gone 30 seconds if Angula had a chance to pounce him on the ground instead of Kirkland getting up, surviving, and then turning the tide.
Absolutely. And that's what the, you know, boxing is about. And that's what this generation that's all into MMA, I agree with you 100%. I mean, they don't understand the art, the science behind boxing, and then they don't see enough. And part of it, and a little bit of it is going to be boxing's fault too, because there's too many mismatches. And, you know, you go in and you do see a guy get knocked out. This is overmatched. You get knocked out in the first round, the fight's over. You know, the guy's supposed to win, you raise his hand, and go on. But, you know, when you see an evenly matched fight, I mean, that's what boxing needs. We need more evenly matched fights where we really, and these are from the guys with two or three fights. You have to test your kids and let them see, you know, this is what it's like. You know, every fight might not be a dog fight, but every three or four fights, you have to go in there and really fight. And that's what I think boxing's missing. You know, it used to be like, you know, Jake LaMotta fought Shakur Robinson five times. Well, now you would never hear that happening. You don't even want to say that with five losses. I mean, much less fight the same guy five times. It's just not going to happen. I mean, and that's where, to me, the boxing world is getting all misconstrued, because who cares really who wins? We're fans. We want to see the best fights. And you know, if it's a great fight, you know, keep giving it to us, or you know, a round robin with these guys. Like, why be like Floyd Mayweather? Floyd's a great fighter. Fight everybody. I mean, hell, let us see if you're the best fighter. Let's see if you can reach out to zero. Go out there and challenge everybody. And not, you know, really, I guess he has everybody except Pacquiao and whomever is making the excuses, I don't know, this week. But, you know, let's see the best fights. Not what? Cut somebody's purse, you know, into nothing now because they have one loss.
one thing I've said about Floyd and Manny Pacquiao for about the last 3 or so years now, whenever they'd be talking, this was the fight to see. And I think it's really started to become relevant after Pacquiao obliterated Oscar De La Hoya. And they started talking about Manny and Floyd. And then it was always, okay, now you got to take the blood test. Okay, no, I want to bet the purse. No, it's this and that. And you're right, it's always an excuse. And the fight I always come back to, and I was just a little guy when this fight happened, but I've seen it on, you know, film many times, was Sugar Ray Leonard and Tommy Hearns. You know, two prime welterweights that, you know what, they had, each a legitimate calling to be the number one guy. They settled it in the ring. They didn't settle
right.
It, you know, with who has to take a blood test, and I have to pick out the size of the ring and the size of the gloves and who walks out last and where we're going to fight. And so, no. It's settle it. Two guys in the ring. Let's go see who's number one. But you're 100% right. And what I think really hurts is that's the mainstream thing right now, Manny and Floyd, where a lot of people are overlooking guys that are very talented fighters, world-class fighters that, you know, average Joe fan, all he knows is Manny and Floyd, and the fact they're not fighting is bad for the sport. And what actually scares me more than anything is if they do fight and the fight is not exciting. And a non-exciting fight would probably favor Mayweather because he's a better defensive boxer, which will kind of remind me of when De La Hoya and Trinidad fought in 99. Very excited. Everybody was looking forward to that fight, and it wasn't exciting. And I think I won, but still, no matter what, it wasn't exciting. And that's my big fear, that everybody with bated breath finally gets ready for this huge mega fight, and it turns out to be a mega dud.
Right. And unfortunately, you know, that's the risk that we're going to take in any of the big boxing matches, I guess. But you're right. Floyd has a tendency to be in ugly fights because he is such a good defensive fighter. You know, everyone wants to see him go to war. Well, Manny can throw 1,000 punches at him if he wants, but if you know, one lands and that one doesn't glancing blow, then, you know, he wasn't very effective. And the thing with Floyd, he can just slip, move, and you know, duck and dodge all night long. So it'll be a boring fight to the casual or general boxing fan, where we, after being in there a little bit, you know, we can appreciate what Floyd's doing, but, you know, we want to see him in a war. We want to see that fight, and we want to see it be a war. And, you know, it's kind of like, you know, Hearns Hagler, or, you know, even, the, you know, Hearns Leonard. Let's see a real winner come out. You know, I think that's what the boxing needs, actually, to get that big shot in the arm.
We'll see. I think it's November. November or December, we're going to see another window for it to happen. And then if not, maybe early next year. But if it doesn't happen next year, it's not happening at all. Even though I said that this year.
I think you're right.
We'll see. Seems like Manny wants to go do other things over there in politics and the Philippines. So he's ready to hang him up any day now. But he definitely is conscious that fight has to happen. For that, you know, retirement announcement, I think. So I think it's going to happen. It's just, it's like that same argument that Tony's making, but also boxing in general can't afford that fight not to be exciting, but also, you know, just they can't afford to lose the hype either of when it's going to happen because it generates so much discussion. So,
exactly. Hopefully it does a great fight. Hopefully it's a war, and we do bring back some of the boxing fans that were wavering a little bit, and, you know, maybe leaning toward the MMA or just getting out of the contact for business altogether. You know, a great fight will bring them back.
Definitely. Now, you've got some history with your next opponent. You already fought her once, beat her. So what's going to be the difference in this fight, you think, after so many years have passed since the first one?
Well, this fight will be it'll be a lot different. First and foremost, I have a different trainer. I'm in a different situation. My life is different. I'm happy and content. And I think that'll all reflect in the ring. And, it's going to be coming right after the criminal trial. So I really think Mia is going to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. And, I want to finish my career with my 50th win, and nothing will make me happier than to gain my 32nd knockout. So, I hate that it has to be Mia, but at the same time, she signed the contract, and looks like it will be Mia. You know, she's going to go down. I don't think she's been stopped too many times in her career, but she definitely will be stopped on June 19th. And we'll get that 32nd knockout and the 50th win, and 99.9% sure one and done.
All right. So is that the back that says maybe another one?
You never know.
I haven't fought in years, but I still say that.
Right.
But Tony and I were actually supposed to fight back in our college days. I was fighting for Virginia Military Institute, and he was with Lock Haven University, and we went to the Nationals the same year. But we probably would have fought if I'd been at a school that had it all 4 years, but I just went to Virginia Military Institute as an exchange program. So I was there for one semester, and I got to the Nationals, and we just ended up fighting in a different bracket. So
wow.
We didn't make it to fight each other. That year, I was actually glad that I didn't get to the finals on ESPN because the kid who beat me got knocked out in 30 seconds by another guy.
Wow.
On national TV. So,
Chrissy, let me add one thing to that. The guy that beat the guy that beat Rich beat me in the quarterfinals. I am 5'8", and we fought at 185 pounds. He was 6'7". With arms that could probably reach him from corner to corner.
Wait.
He ended up being a 3-time national champ. But that kind of sucked that I drew him in the first round. But the other best part of the story was the guy that beat Rich was a guy by the name of Michael Jordan, who looked like the Michael Jordan. And I kicked his ass earlier in the season, and that fight currently resides on YouTube.
Wow. If I didn't know you were so young, I would have to say, who were you fighting? Bob Foster or somebody? I mean, he's the only guy that tall that fights
in
Miami. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
I have a picture of me fighting him. On, like I said, what was funny was when I got to the Nationals that year, I get down there, and I had a scouting report on everybody in my weight class. I had fought the guy, Michael Jordan. I had already beaten him. There was a guy there that I was 1-1 against, but most people thought I was 2-0. He was a southpaw by the name of Jesse Bond, who Rich fought. There was two other guys that I either fought or I had seen. So I had a scouting report on everybody. There was two guys I didn't know. One was this guy, Mark, who was 6'7", and the other guy was Rich. And I said, if God is smiling on me tonight, I said, let me draw in the first round one of the guys that I've already fought, and then I can get a scouting report on these other two guys, so then I can draw them on nights 2 and 3, and have a scouting report on everybody. I get the call at my hotel. They're like, we just did the drawing. All right, who do you got? You got the kid from Air Force. I'm like, the 6'7" kid? They're like, yep. I'm like, wow. FML. I said FML before FML became popular.
I know what you mean. I'm like, God, everybody I fight, even when I was fighting in the 130s, they were still like 5'8", 5'9", and I'm, 5'4" on a good day. So I have no business fighting these girls. And then, Khaled Layla, who was like 6'1", something, these girls are just too big. So I can feel your pain, definitely.
Now, what do you think about what Layla did with the sport and, just kind of staying in long enough to go undefeated for a little while and then leaving it? Would you? Sorry, folks, for the interruption there. We had a little technical difficulty. Bye.
Tornado.
Hey, sorry about that. We just lost internet for a minute, so.
Oh.
Should be all set now. Getting
I was doing good, too.
Hello?
Hello, Christy. Sorry about that.
Yes. That's okay. I think it was me.
Oh.
You know, the modern technology, so. But that's all I have is a cell phone now.
Well, you were talking about Layla Ali there. Can you tell a little bit about what you think of how her career went in the sport and what she did for the sport?
You know, I think Layla, she definitely brought a lot of attention to women's boxing because she's Layla Ali. You know, at the beginning, I think she got throughout her career, she got a lot of breaks because she, again, is Layla Ali, Muhammad Ali's daughter. But at the same time, she went to the gym and improved each and every fight. And she put her time in. And, you know, she improved while she was doing it. She just didn't stick with it long. And I don't know that she ever intended to, which, you know, that's her prerogative. But as I said, with me, I love it. I love the sport. And I always will be involved in some way. You know, amateur boxing gym in Florida. There's pros in there as well, but I really focus on the amateur program. So I'm always going to be involved some way. And I think for women's boxing to really grow, it would have helped if, you know, somebody with a name like Layla would have kind of stuck it out a little bit more, at least been there to help promote the sport. But chose to go in another direction, and that's fine too. Women's boxing will continue with or without her.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think about the state of women's boxing in the pros and amateurs right now? I know that it's more along the lines of wrestling and mixed martial arts seem to get the press for the women being involved these days, but what about boxing? Do you think it's kind of need of another jolt to the women's division of the sport?
I think you know, definitely we need a new star, a new face. But in order to get that person out there, it's going to take a promoter like Golden Boy, Luda Bella, somebody that has a lot of TV dicks, to kind of use that person like Don King used me. And, you know, King put me out there. He's like, sink or swim. You know, he didn't really baby me or treat me any differently than he treated any other fighters. But that's what I think most of these girls or, you know, women, you know, that's what they want. They just want to be treated like a fighter and put them out there and let's see what happens.
Right. Now, what would you say was your best fight of your career or best moment in the sport?
Well, the best moment, probably... I was the Boxing Hall of Fame up in Kennesota, New York. I was the Grand Marshal for the induction weekend, and like in 1996, that was awesome because I got to meet so many legends, Carmen Basilio, Gene Fulmer, Willie Pep, Archie Moore. I mean, I was scared to death to go there, but it was so awesome to be around those guys. Marvin Hagler, I mean, Marvin Hagler came up and said something about my left hook, and I thought, oh, my God, not, you know, he knows my name, but then he knew that, you know, I like to throw the left hook. So, you know, that was pretty cool. Of course, been on the cover of Sports Illustrated is a great, great achievement. You know, I've been very lucky. I've been able to accomplish, and I have a lot of great moments in sports. But as far as my best fight, I think probably my best fight was probably against Lisa Hollowine. It was actually on the rematch of Rockman and Phoenix Lewis. But she's a big puncher, and I was a boxer puncher that night, and I felt like it was my most complete fight.
Cool. And I know you still get called out by the announcers and have fights. I was actually a couple rows away from you at the Cosmopolitan when they had the fights at the pool deck.
It was freezing.
Yeah, it was really windy that day. So remember, some guy's hat ended up in the upper deck, one of the cornermen.
day. It was pretty cold.
Yeah. It was a nice place for a fight, just in the wrong day.
Yeah, right. It is. It's cool. And, you know, it's nice to go to Vegas to be at the smaller, and it wasn't a small show, but a smaller show where it's a little more, you know, you get to rub elbows with everybody. Ernie Shavers was there that night. Zeb Judah. There was a lot of boxing superstars there. And, you know, you kind of get to really talk to them and, you know, mingle a little bit with the fans. It's a little bit different and much nicer, really, than being at the mega fights.
Right. Yeah, I actually was able to get Teddy Atlas a business card of mine that night, and you know, I just got his ear for about 2 minutes, but you know, I asked him for an interview, and he called me like for 3 weeks after that, trying to set the interview up. For some reason, my phone system was a little screwy, so he would ring once, and I wouldn't be able to pick it up, so I had to figure out what was wrong. I finally got in touch with him through his charity, and we got the interview done, but I was just so impressed at the way he just, you know, kind of came after me to get the interview. So I know, I guess he doesn't get asked that much because he's always talking on, you know, commentary and stuff. It's
right.
A rare time to get interviewed.
That's cool that Teddy. But that's the way he is, you know, kind of he's one of the good guys. Sometimes he's a little bit heavily opinionated, but, you know, that's good for him. You know, he's the mic in front of him, so he can tell everybody what his opinion on every situation is. But Ian Hart, I think he's a good guy. I know he's a good guy, and he's kind of been there to defend me a few times. So, you know, he's a cool guy. I'm glad he gave you the opportunity.
Yeah, it was a great interview, too. He's definitely more behind the guy than people realize. He does a lot for the sport and for just community kids in New York. He does a lot for. So that was something interesting that I got out of it. But what do you do outside the ring? You obviously talked about managing boxers. What are some of your other hobbies that get into?
You know, I enjoy riding my Harley. And just sports in general, you know, watch a lot of sports on TV, attend basketball, you know, the rodeo. I like to be in Las Vegas because the rodeos are always going on. And, you know, kind of just hanging out right now, not doing a whole lot, just training and trying to get back in shape. So I'll be ready for June 19th and able to beat Mia St. John.
Awesome. Yeah, when I was out in Vegas for a little while last year, I was kind of surprised at how country it really is on the outskirts. I mean, if you go to horseback riding, you can go, there's multiple places, and I've gone out to Red Rock out there for some horseback riding, and it was just unbelievable that you could drive from the Strip to a place like that in under an hour right there, you know, and you're in the desert if you go certain distance from out there, so it's definitely one of those nice places that I'd like to go back to.
Yeah, Vegas is pretty cool, and like you said, you know, you have this Strip that has everything and anything that you can think of, and then just outside of it, it's pretty country and kind of laid back. You know, you live in as long as you sell the Strip.
Right. Yeah, it's very scenic out there. Too. I mean, just, even when you're on the Strip or driving around that area, you're looking at mountains all around, so that's kind of cool.
It's so cool, and then it's the snow-capped mountains. You know, it's
really,
like 90 degrees, and then you look up and you see the snow atop the mountains. It's pretty cool.
That was really a trip for me because I've been an East Coast guy my whole life in New England, and to go out there and then not only see the snow on the mountains when it's hot, but to just see the trees lose their leaves when it's like 50 degrees out. Some of the trees are losing their leaves, except for, you know, the palm trees are always the same. But, you know, I just was like, how could it be like, you know, leaves are falling off the trees here in February when it's only 50 degrees?
Right.
But
yeah, I'm from the north too, so it's definitely much different, you know, like from West Virginia. So, you know, all of our mountains are, you know, you don't really see the mountains. You can't see the rocks and everything. You just see trees everywhere.
Right.
So it's definitely different on the West Coast. And change the scenery. It's nice.
Right. All right. Well, is anybody you want to give a shout-out to or thank or say hello to out there?
You know, I just definitely have to thank you guys for having me on. And just tell Mia that I hope she's training hard. I'm sure she is. But, you know, make sure that she comes in great shape. I want the best Mia St. John that can be there at the Mountain Casino, Mountain Table Casino on June 19th. And, you know, I'll take care of business, and we'll go from there. You know, we'll see if that 99.9% retired stays retired or not.
All right. Well, I definitely hope a lot of people tune in. I think they're going to get a good show, as always. And I think it's about time we highlight a little bit more women's boxing. One of the reasons why we always try to get women guests and women fighters on the show is because when I was in high school, I was on the wrestling team with a girl who ended up being the first one to ever wrestle a varsity match in the state of Massachusetts. And then she went on to wrestle for Harvard.
Wow.
So, you know, I know what it's like to be on the same team with a really tough woman who's in a sport that a lot of people consider a man's sport. You know, and now I look at these headlines nowadays and I see these female wrestlers fighting in the state tournaments and in the at the high school level, it's like almost at the level where they're going to have start having girls teams. I know they have girls tournaments now, but it's just amazing to see that kind of turnaround and then to be able to watch it in boxing and mixed martial arts at the same time too. And going to fights too in MMA and locally down in Massachusetts, I would notice that when the women fought on a particular card, it was like they weren't just fighting for themselves or for the win. They're fighting for all of womankind to represent. And that's what I love about it. You know, just watching them not only fight for individual respect, but for the respect of women everywhere. And it's just awesome. So, you know, we try to do whatever we can to foster that and keep up the interest.
Well, definitely appreciate it. And we'll do our best, I'm sure, on June 19th, not to let you guys down.
All right. Well, good luck to you.
Great talking to you. And,
thank you.
Have a good night. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, you too.
Bye-bye. So, you go. There's Christy Martin, the coal miner's daughter. And she's obviously going to be in a big, tough fight coming up in the court case and with this fight with Mia St. John. Sounds like she's definitely confident, and she's going to do well, though. So might be same result as the first time, or more one-sided beating. Who knows? But definitely we wish her luck, and we'll be watching and keeping an eye out for her. Now, I did have a couple stories I wanted to mention quickly before we get Cody Bollinger on, who is a guy that MMA guy who has a nice history in the sport. He's 12-2. He's fighting, I think it's Dean Thomas, a UFC veteran, coming up pretty soon. And we'll get him on. Here we go. I'll tell you in a second. Here it is. He's a featherweight prospect, Dean Thomas. He's fighting a Pride veteran and UFC veteran. Fighting May 12th in Pennsylvania. I don't know if it's Philadelphia, but anyway. We had him on in September. It was kind of a little bit of a short interview. They asked him all the standard questions. And just, I didn't realize we had him on before, but it's not a big deal for us to have guests on more than once. We do that every now and then for the good guests. I'm sure we'll probably have Christy on again at some point. Especially if she gets into management heavy and generates a career there. All right. But we did have some big news here that I wanted to mention from MMA. And this is not so surprising because if you've ever seen this Alistair Overeem dude, you know he's a big guy. And there was a little bit of a hairy situation when he was overseas last year and was getting ready to fight Brock Lesnar, and they had to spring a test on him, and they had to kind of schedule it around his situation because his mother was dealing with a sickness, a cancer scare. So now he shows up for a press conference in Las Vegas, and they pull the old, come over here and pee in a cup routine. And all of a sudden, his testosterone to epitestosterone ratio is greater than 10 to 1. And the permitted maximum is 6 to 1. So the Nevada State Athletic Commission is going to have to withhold his license because basically that ratio indicates the use of synthetic testosterone. And that's been a kind of a hot topic in mixed martial arts in recent months. We had Chael Sonnen was probably the biggest case of testosterone replacement therapy. And he had a suspension and dealt with all that. And came out, he said that he thought he was approved for that type of treatment because he has hypergonadism. And now this case kind of puts another spotlight on the whole testosterone replacement therapy. We had actually Rampage Jackson admitted to doing it to recover from an injury. And it's actually not like a banned thing. Surprisingly enough, it's you can't test for it. If you test for, you know, using it, then you're busted. But if you're doing it and then you know, you stay take off some time from it and then you test fine, it's not like you're going to get brought up on charges. It's not like the way they look at baseball players doing steroids. It's a completely different deal, and it's actually a lot more accepted than people realize, I think. And that's what really gives you the kind of bad feeling about, you know, these tests and the way they're surprising people. Because if they're not going to go and say, well, you can't do this, you know, if you get caught doing this, you're going to get thrown out of the league unless you're approved to do it through a doctor, which is what they've done to get people, you know, from getting busted on tests and stuff. But it seems kind of weird to me because Overeem is a big dude. He's a huge draw for the UFC, huge draw for the sport. And, you know, to stay that size, you've got to do some different stuff. I mean, I'm not advocating testosterone replacement therapy, but, you know, the guy, he wants to be the biggest he can be and the best he can be in the sport for as long as possible. You're going to look for every advantage. And if it's not something that they're going to throw you out of the league for, then you're probably going to do it. So I think this is kind of a crazy story. You know, they either need to say 100% do it, go ahead at your own risk, or they need to say that you can't do it at all, and if you get caught doing it, you're going to get more of serious, you know, fine than losing your license or whatever. But it wasn't a situation where he tested after a fight, so I think it's going to be far different the way they handle it. But he will be sidelined for a while, and the only way out is if his B sample test is cleaned, or if he can explain the first result to the Nevada Commission satisfaction. But that puts in jeopardy his big fight. Alistair Overeem is supposed to fight Junior Dos Santos for the title, UFC 146. So that's all going to change now because it's in Nevada, so they can't have that fight if he doesn't have a license in Nevada. And they're probably going to put Frank Mir in, is the word that we're hearing. So we'll see. It's another big story in MMA. But, of course, Dana White is pissed. Quote him as being beyond angry. And he says the worst part of it is he sat right in front of us and lied to us. It's beyond comprehension. You're an absolute moron, a brain-dead absolute dummy. It goes beyond a guy having any common sense whatsoever. You know, you gotta hate Dana White when he comes out with something like that. You know, calling the guy an idiot, and you know, he acts like he's fought a million guys tougher than anybody he ever makes fun of. Sometimes, you know, like I said, I don't advocate testosterone replacement theory or treatment, but just immediately call a guy an idiot for having levels that high. It just doesn't seem smart to me. But anyway, another story over in Thailand. They're banning MMA in Thailand, and it seems to have a lot to do with the trend of not wanting to go against Muay Thai. And basically, they say it's against the 1999 boxing law this week. And it was a situation where somebody wanted to hold an MMA event there, and they had to check on the legality of it. And so the head of the officials said that organizing an MMA event here would badly hurt the image of Muay Thai. And there have only been two MMA events held in Bangkok, and neither were approved by that commission. If you want to do this kind of business, you should do it in another country, says this guy, Sakol, who is the chairman of the commission. Organizing MMA here could mislead the public into believing that Muay Thai is brutal. I don't get that connection, but anyway. So that's not going to be encouraging for anybody wanting to bring an MMA event to Thailand. Then we got another here, a little bit of a story here before we get Frankie on again. Or Cody, I should say. Frankie was his father. He was also an MMA fighter. Anyway, the audience for the current edition of The Ultimate Fighter averaged 1.17 million through four episodes, airing Fridays on Fox's FX network. And it's actually down from the 1.2 million average of Tough Spring 2011 season that ran on Wednesdays. So it's actually, yeah, I was actually kind of bummed out that it was on Fridays now, that I was so used to Wednesdays. But as we talked about before, Spike has been counter-programming the FX shows with material of their own from old Tough episodes, so and I don't think that can help. But also, you got to think that the Friday Night Fights is going to interfere with that. Like this week, I didn't even see the Tough episode because I watched Hank Lundy rather than changing over to FX. So if you're going after that demographic, it's a real bad idea to put it on the same night of boxing, because even though it's not a requirement of any sort to be a boxing fan and an MMA fan, there are a lot of just fight fans in general that will watch boxing or MMA. And if it comes down to a fight like that with a guy who's been on a few times, and it's like, for me, a guy who I've actually personally met, I'm going to watch that rather than MMA. So that was a bad move on their part. But anyway, to put the dagger in all the way, I guess, to really throw a wrench into their operations, it looks like Bellator is going to put out a reality show in 2013. And they're going to go with a guy who's produced shows like The Amazing Race. So it's not going to be, out of the woodwork company that the UFC created themselves, like, you know, for Bellator. It's going to be an actual production crew coming in to do the show for them. And as I've mentioned in the past, they're now owned by Viacom, which is a pretty big media company. So they can definitely afford to splurge and do it right. So I'm excited about that. And we'll see that next year. So the Ultimate Fighter is definitely going to have some competition going against them for the best reality show pretty shortly. But let's see if we can get Cody Bollinger on the phone. He's probably expecting us already. A little bit late. And he's coming up against Dean Thomas, May 12th, in Pennsylvania. And just trying to find his number here. Probably already have it in my system. We called him in September. And yes, I do. Hopefully it hasn't changed. All right, so we're going to try to connect with him.
a mailbox belonging to 760-552-9288 is full and cannot accept new messages at this time. Please.
Well, that can't be good. Well, let me email his PR guy. See what's going on. Yeah. What else can we rant about? Well, I do have a couple more stories in the loop.
So I'm trying to think, you know, what else, what do we got coming up? This weekend is what? Easter weekend. Yeah, you want to go for some fights this Easter weekend?
Sure.
Yeah. All my relatives together under one roof. I'll be quarantining myself downstairs. Hopefully no one will bother me.
Yeah, I haven't looked at the boxing schedule, but I know the UFC has had a real big drought. Their next big fight, I think, is Evans versus Jones. Let me bring that up. See if we can check.
Each week, maybe go over an upcoming schedule, and usually these are the pay-per-view, like every 2 weeks. And yeah, I can't even call you doing big time upcoming schedules.
See what we got. Yeah, April 14th. It's next UFC on Field TV 2. It's Gustafsson versus Silva, and then it's April 21st. That's the Jones versus Evans card. But it's like spring break for the UFC. We just haven't seen anything recently, except for the Ultimate Fighter, and that I still haven't gotten a chance to watch the last episode. I'll find it somewhere online, I'm sure. I found a couple times actually. I watched half of it. But once I got to the fight, the streaming was so slow, it was, like, not even worth watching. It's like watching a flipbook picture book with the animation instead of an actual fight. So it's, like, kind of pointless. But anyway, I'll get a chance to watch that probably tonight or tomorrow morning before the next episode airs tomorrow night. But we have... bunch of different fights around the world coming up in mixed martial arts this weekend. So tomorrow's April 6th. We got Alaska Cage fighting up in Fairbanks, Alaska. Fight UK 7 over in Leicestershire, England. Bellator is obviously going to have another show. They do it every Friday. BF's Bellator Fighting Championship 64. And that's another thing I would just think would hurt the Ultimate Fighter is Bellator does their stuff every Friday night on the MTV 2. So it's just a bad night for picking that show date. Anyway, on Saturday over in London, we got Ultimate Challenge MMA 27. And in Tokyo, we got Cage Impact 2012 in Tokyo over again by the Deep promotion. We got a fight over in India, Super Fight League. Saturday. Kickdown 100 is going on in Denver, Colorado, Saturday night. And here's a nice name for a fight card. Festival. The Festival over Las Vegas, Nevada. The South Point Arena by Tough Enough. And I don't know if I ever get a chance to see any of their shows over there. But I'm pretty sure they're like all amateur fights. Yeah, everybody's 0-0 on this card. But I did see them on TV out there. Pretty good shows. Anyway, we also have ZST SWAT 46 from Chofu, Tokyo, Japan. Heat 22 in Tokyo on April 8th. Both of those on Sunday there. And then we don't have anything until April 12th, which is next Thursday. If you're in Saudi Arabia, you can go to Fight Night Live. That's about it there. Let's check over on BoxRec. See if we can dig up there. Nope, new message. message already. Same old number. Well, let's see. We'll give him another story and then we'll call him back. All right, so what do we have? Box for that guy. I don't even know who's on Friday Night Fights this week for boxing.
Yeah, there is a Friday Night Fight card this week. It's maybe I'll go to the movie tomorrow night, the American Reunion.
American Reunion?
Yeah. First three were awesome. I see no reason why the fifth shouldn't be.
Yeah, they were funny. I'll give them that. I wasn't really a huge fan, but anyway, what can you do? Speaking of women's boxing, as we had our guest on earlier, there we have an interesting bout over in the Czech Republic tonight. Middleweight's Christina Hammer, 11-0 with 7 knockouts, fighting Julie Shabalala, actually, who's 4-1 for the WBO middleweight title. And she won. Christina Hammer won. Surprise, surprise. And so it was also for the World Boxing Federation female middleweight title. So she remains undefeated there. And it was also another real big mismatch on the card. Tommy Altman at middleweight, 15-1-1 with 5 knockouts, fought Peter Raikala, 4-36. There's another guy on this card who was 0-29. That happens over in the Czech Republic. Anyway, it's also tonight over in Jefferson City, Missouri. We had a couple four heavyweight bouts on this one card. The top two were pretty decent matchups here. We got Chauncey Welliver, 52-5 with 5 draws and 20 knockouts. Fought Bert Cooper, 38-23 with 31 knockouts. For the WBC Continental Americas heavyweight title. We also had Billy Wright, 36-4, against Raymond Ochiang, who's 23-15-3. That was for the interim PABA heavyweight title. I don't have any results right here in front of me, but unless they haven't fought yet, that's what's going on tonight. What else we can dig up here? The WBC Super Featherweight title is on the line tomorrow night in Tokyo. Takahiro Ao, A-O is the last name, 22-2 with 1 draw, 10 knockouts, fighting my favorite Asian fighter name to pronounce, Turdsack Kokiachim. Who is 46-3-1 with 31 knockouts. And Turdsack is the same card as Vic D'Artagnan, fighting at bantamweight, 37-4 with 1 draw, 27 knockouts. And he's fighting a 12-rounder against Shinsuke Yamanaka, who's 15-0-2 with 11 knockouts. And to round out that card, we got a 10-round featherweight fight between Hozumi Hasegawa, 29-4, and Felipe Carlos Felix, who's 18-0 with 10 knockouts. So, if ESPN had the budget to go to Tokyo, that might be a good ESPN Friday Night Fights for them. Probably on a different day, being in Tokyo. Wouldn't actually be Friday here, I don't think. Anyway, April 6th, Friday, Doubletree Hotel, Ontario, California. We have a lightweight main event between having Darley Perez, 24-0, 18 knockouts, and Elaine Hernandez, who is 18-9-2 with 10 knockouts. What else we got? Well, here's a real mismatch. Argentina. Gonzalo Omar Basile is fighting a six-round heavyweight fight. He is 53-6 with 24 knockouts. He's fighting Ademar Leonardo Correa, who's 7-7-1. Rough. I don't know if that's our mismatch of the week, though. There's just so many of them. There's a guy 47-11 fighting a guy 5-26, also in Argentina. We got for Saturday. You got a fight in Quintana Roo, Mexico. Flyweight Edgar Sosa, 44-7, 27 knockouts, fighting Wilbert Wojcab, 33-6, 1 draw, 18 knockouts, for the WBC Silver Flyweight title. Also on the card, Humberto Soto, 57-7, with 2 draws, 34 knockouts, fighting Claudine Lacerda, 14-2. And let's see what else we got on Saturday. Let's just give Cody a quick ring. See if he's back in the in range of his cell phone, I guess. I don't know what's going on now. His PR guy says he's at. So we should get him now.
A mailbox belonging to 7605529.
All right, I guess we're not going to talk to Cody tonight. But if you want to listen to an interview of his, you can always go to fightradio.info and check back in September. We interviewed him the last time. Unfortunately, he's probably away from his phone, and he has been for a while. But he hasn't checked his mailbox and deleted any messages. So he's off the reservation, as they say. But maybe we'll reschedule for next week or figure something out, get him back on before his May 2nd fight. If not, like I said, you can always go and listen to his old interview. And get the gist of what he's all about from that. We asked him, like I said, pretty much all the standard questions. The thing we haven't got a chance to ask him about is, you know, what he thinks of this next opportunity for him to fight Dean Thomas. And a couple other details we could have got out of him, but we'll have to figure out another time to do that, I guess. So let's just go back to the boxing schedule. See what we can come up with there, and then I guess we'll sign off early for the night. Oh, here's a big fight coming up this weekend from South Haven, Mississippi. One guy we had on the show, one guy I met in person, but have not had on the show yet. Both fighting each other here in a fight for the vacant International Boxing Association heavyweight title. And it's big old James Toney, 73-7-3. With 44 knockouts, fighting Bobby Gunn.
Oh, wow.
And I did not realize that fight was this weekend.
And he's in gloves, not bare-knuckling it?
Yeah, they're not bare-knuckling it. I don't know if Bobby's abandoned that idea or just kind of put it on hold, but I think just the money behind a boxing match would just be too much to turn down at this point. I don't know. I doubt he's making as much doing bare knuckle boxing. And to fight a guy like James Toney, I don't think he could turn that down. But he has traditionally been a light heavyweight. So he's going to be giving up a lot of size in this one, I think. We'll see, though. 73-7 is Tony's record. And Gunn is 21-4-1 with 18 knockouts, not including his bare knuckle boxing days.
James is going to come in weight-wise. I know he's been hovering around the 230s, the high 230s is where he plays. He's going to be in for 250 now.
So last fight was Denis Lebedev. Lebedev was 198 pounds, and he lost by unanimous decision. Tony did. That was back in November. Before that, in February of last year, James Tony beat Davis 46-14 by unanimous decision. Bobby Gunn's last fight, on the other hand, was quite a bit longer than just a year ago. His was 2009 against Thomas Adamek, back in July 11th of 2009. And stoppage in round four, 37-1 was Adamek at the time. And that was for the IBF cruiserweight title. So Tony is not in a few years, and he's not fought at heavy, I don't think, in his entire career. It's cruiserweight all the way, or light heavyweight. Let's see. Yeah, I'm just seeing, looking at his record right now, I'm seeing all cruiserweights. Cruiserweight. All heavyweights. So this is going to be his first heavyweight fight, and it's going to be for a title. So good luck to Bobby Gunn.
I got a question for you. I want to see how good you are.
What?
Got my little Spring magazine the other day, and I'm looking at the 33rd annual highly unofficial awards. Who won the award for the Inspirational Fighter of the Year? I'll give you three guesses.
Inspirational Fighter of the Year. Robert Guerrero.
Nope, okay. It wasn't Robert Guerrero. It was a good guess, though.
Jeez. So I think of, like, stories in boxers that were good this year. Or comebacks, upsets. How about... So I'm going to get this one, I think. Anthony Peterson. No, Lamont Peterson. Really? Wow. Well, I mean, you got me then. Who is it?
Christy Martin.
There you go. Go figure. Oh, you know what we forgot to tell Christy? We forgot to tell her about Lou Duva. Remember when we asked Lou Duva who the best boxer was?
Yeah, that's right.
Christy Martin. I'll have to get that news out to her publicist. Just so she knows. Anyway, there's no other big blockbuster bouts on this card that Tony and Gunn are going to be fighting on, but geez, it would be nice if we could see it somewhere. It's not on TV. I'll have to wait for YouTube to come up with a video, I guess.
Yeah.
What else we got?
Here's this one for you. I've never heard of this fighter, but he's got a cool name. Most fun name to pronounce. Hakim Shimuda.
Shimuda?
Shimuda. Akamumi.
Akafumi. Rough names in the boxing world. Anyway, that's about it. There's one last card I guess I should mention. In Russia on Sunday, welterweights, there's some pretty decent records here. And might actually have the mismatch of the week on this card. Down further a little bit. But the main event is Aslanbek Kozaev, who's 19-0 with 6 knockouts, fighting Andre Abramenka, who's 17-1-2 with 4 knockouts. And also on the card, a couple little mismatches here. 10-0 Peter Zivkovic, who is a light welterweight, fighting Ismatulo Gulamov, who's 6-5-2. Sort of a mismatch, not really. The other guy's got a little bit more experience. But this welterweight fight is pretty bad. Anton Novikov at welterweight is fighting a 6-rounder. He's 23-0 with 9 knockouts, fighting a guy named Ermat Ryskalbiev, who is 6-2 with 5 knockouts. So that's definitely going to be a lucky break for Ermat if he wins that one. But I think that's just about all we got. There's one other story I just kind of want to... Sorry about that, folks. We had another technical difficulty situation there. But as I said, I just wanted to cover one last story. We're going to do that, and then we're going to sign off for the night. So I'm just going to connect Tony for that. So at least he can sign off to everybody. But as I was saying, Crystal Idol is discovering politics in a tougher fight than MMA. So we're going to cover that right now.
Tornado.
All right. We're back in action here, and we're going to wind it down. We just had a little interruption. My dad's got that magic jack set up on the computer, so every time he gets a call, I get disconnected from Skype. So if there's any techno geeks out there that know how to fix that problem with the router, let me know. But anyway, I was talking about Chris Lytle. He's actually vying to win the primary election for Indiana Senate District 28. He was on the show a couple times over the years. One interview in particular I remember because he said that one of the things he misses most about the old days of MMA was that he used to be able to headbutt. And that was one of his favorite moves. And he actually retired on a really good high note, beating Dan Hardy in his last UFC fight. Now he is stumping for election. In a portion of the state of Indiana with about 130,000 residents. And he's finding it tough because basically being a UFC fighter has limits in terms of general recognition. Not really a lot of voting age people are aware of the whole MMA scene in general. So basically it turns out that his constituency doesn't necessarily fit the demographics of the typical fight fan. And he says, I used to go out there thinking everybody out there knows me. But when you get that list of people who I'm going to walk towards, who's going to actually vote in the primaries, everybody's 60, 70, 80 years old. They don't know me. They don't watch MMA, so not really my demographic. So it was a lot harder than I thought to get my name recognition out there. I got to hustle. I got to be out there doing it every day. Basically, the rules are different, too. It's not really a fair fight. But basically, he says, the thing I don't like about the campaigning is that fighting is more pure. At the end of the day, you're going to be going in there, and it's going to be all one-on-one, and you can't talk and you can't lie. The truth is going to come out at some point. That's in fighting. But in politics, he says, the truth never comes out. And that's why these people who have usually been there for so long are usually the dirtiest and the rottenest of the bunch. They're the ones who are the best at it, and there's never a time where you have to when you have to prove yourself. It's just the bigger the lie, the more people want to believe in it. It's kind of a very depressing reality that I'm faced with right now. This is who's running things, and this is why. And that's kind of the truth of the matter. But, you know, probably the worst thing that he's run into, I guess, he said, is there was a woman at an event holding up a sign with a picture of him fighting somebody in a particularly bloody fight. And the sign says, you want this as your next representative.
Yeah.
so. Quite the smear campaign going on against the MMA fighter from Indiana. But well, I know from personal experience that the Indiana justice system is pretty political, and you know they don't pull any punches there as far as spreading lies. I tried to go after a judge there with something that was unrelated to fighting, but it was one of my writing stories, and I had a website called judgegod.com and everything, and I was getting a lot of buzz online, and she just shut it all down. That's how it works down there. You know, you don't threaten the people in power. It'll shut you down. So good luck, Chris. It's a jungle out there, but we wish him luck, and hopefully he gets elected there and tries to change some things. But on that note, we're going to say sayonara, good night. And until next week, we will we'll let you know what the guests are going to be, who the guests are going to be. Probably Cody's going to be in the mix there somewhere. We apologize to anybody who's tuning in to hear him tonight, but what can we do? Not answering his phone. So that's all, folks. Thanks to our sponsors, Cocaine Energy Drink, drinkcocaine.com. MarijuanaMuscle.com, our product sponsor. And, of course, ZionShop.com. They got all kinds of gear and supplements and all that kind of stuff. And they're not related to the actual Zion company, which had a big story this week, actually. I forgot to mention the founder, the original founder, Russell Pike, was found guilty of tax evasion. It's... trial's over. It's all over but the appeal now. He's facing 5 years in prison. So that was big on the radar this week. And next week, next Monday, it's a big start of a trial. If everything's going forward as planned, the trustee will be going to trial against Zion's current administration and all the people that are responsible really for the bankruptcy there, the Fertittas and everything, Fertitta Enterprises, and the whole cast of characters there, and there's been talk all this week that there might be a settlement, but I haven't heard anything official yet, so it looks like there may be a trial starting on the 9th. So hopefully that goes forward and is successful, and we'll be talking more about that and putting more out on the internet as far as reports in the coming days. Well, there we go. There's our 90-second warning, so we got to go. Adios. Good night.